It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I am joined by a couple of my colleagues on the Fed Postal Coalition. We work on issues relating to federal workforce and the federal employees that we represent, and I'm happy to have them here. I've got Bruce Moyer in the studio with me, who represents the National Association of Postal Supervisors and also the National Association of Assistant U.S. Attorneys. That's a mouthful when I say it all out. I've got Maureen Gilman from National Treasury Employees Union. And on the phone, Jesse, are you with us?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
All right. I've got Jesse Clement, who's here from NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. So welcome to everybody.
Thank you. Good
morning. And today we're going to be discussing some of the things that happened on Capitol Hill right before the recess, and then also what we can expect going forward. We've got about 2 weeks coming up on when Congress returns in September, and then the elections, and lots to talk about regarding federal employees. So just a quick reminder that Fed Talk's brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you'd like to join our discussion today or speak directly to our guests, call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And with that, let's get right to the good stuff. So why don't each of you tell me a little bit about yourself, your organization? Bruce, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for the opportunity to be on the air with you this morning,
Jenny. Sure.
The Federal Postal Coalition, of which I have the privilege of serving as chair, is an alliance of 30 associations, unions, professional management groups that represent nearly 5 million federal and postal employees and retirees. There's 30 organizations. Many of them have advocates or lobbyists that represent their interests. Together, our organizations have a collective voice that projects the interests and the needs of the federal and postal workforce. Congress plays an important role in governing the pay and compensation packages of federal employees and retirees and their benefits. And therefore, it's important that that the federal workforce be represented on Capitol Hill. And that coalition helps to work together to assure that that representation occurs.
All right. Thank you. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the two groups who
And the two groups that I represent are, as you said, the Postal Supervisors, the National Association of Postal Supervisors. These are folks who manage United States Postal Service. They range from postmasters to managers to supervisors of post offices and processing plants throughout the country. The National Association of Assistant United States Attorneys are the career-level prosecutors throughout the 93 United States Attorney offices around the country.
Okay, great. And Mo, you want to give us a little introduction?
Yeah, thank you, Jenny. I am the legislative and political director for the National Treasury Employees Union, a federal labor union that represents bargaining unit employees throughout the federal government. We represent employees in 31 different agencies, including the Treasury Department, Department of Homeland Security, FDIC, SEC, Food and Drug Administration. So we represent a lot of different kinds of employees, and we provide them with both legislative and collective bargaining assistance and representation on a wide range of issues.
Okay, great. And Jesse, why don't you give us a little background on NARF?
Sure. I am the communications and legislative representative at NARF, which is the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. NARF represents the nearly 5 million active employees at all levels, as well as our retired federal employees.
So we've got a little bit of one of the things I liked about the three of you is we get kind of a broad representation of the federal government here. And especially since we all work together on these issues, it's nice to get each perspective, especially got the postal side as well, which is good. So, well, moving on from that, why don't we talk a little bit about sort of where federal employees have been, set the stage a little bit, and what we're seeing now. One of the things that we've all spent a lot of time talking about is, you know, attrition, pay freeze, a whole bunch of discussion about whether federal employees are overpaid, underpaid. It's kind of shifted to retirement benefits now, not so much salary. That part, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seems like the salary part has disappeared a little bit on that sense. And now everybody's talking about compensation. Mo, I don't know if you want to.
Sure. Just to recap where we've been over the last year or two in terms of federal pay and benefits, I think the biggest thing is that the federal workforce continues to be under a two-year pay freeze, which has contributed $60 billion, if you calculate that over 10 years, which is how they do the budget scoring on Capitol Hill. So right. They've contributed $60 billion through a two-year pay freeze. And legislation has also been enacted that will require newly hired federal employees starting this January to contribute an additional 2.3% of their salary toward their pensions. That's going to contribute another $15 billion toward deficit reduction efforts. So I think a lot of people look at it and say, you know, the federal employees have sort of done a lot. They have contributed to trying to help our economic situation. And it's kind of time to broaden the groups that are involved in contributing at this
right,
point.
Right, and I think I've heard NTEU say many times is that federal employees, not only have they contributed, they were the first
right.
to contribute.
Right.
So, and what are some of the conversations that you all have been hearing about the salaries versus, you know, federal, private sector, retirement benefits? That seems ongoing. So, Bruce, have you?
Well, there is an ongoing debate as to whether federal employees are overpaid, and it depends upon which report you look at that as to where you come out on the question. First of all, in terms of the broad picture and the landscape, let's be aware that over the last several years, fueled by the Tea Party movement, there has been a backlash against the federal government, against the scope and size of government, and federal employees have paid the price for that through that kind of debate that the Tea Party and anti-government forces have waged. Nonetheless, the current structure that is in place that governs how federal pay raises come about and the kind of methodology that's used in comparing federal jobs to those in the private sector still has found that federal employees are underpaid by, what is it, somewhere between 25 to 30%.
Yeah, I think
overall.
It's 26% is the
right.
latest
I think so.
To come out of Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yeah, and it's a very precise measurement that looks at jobs in the private sector and compares those to the federal sector. And the law provides for that raise to come about unless it is overridden by the president. And each year, going back to the origin of the law that came about in the early 90s, the president has overridden that with a much smaller pay increase, and therefore federal employees are way behind the curve, according to that methodology, and are looking now, finally, at the possibility of a very, very small, but nonetheless, on the plus side, a pay increase of about 0.5% sometime next year. May not kick in until the spring.
Right, that seems ongoing. Jesse, one of the things I think you've probably seen, and I'm sure NARF is looking at, are some of those studies that have been out there that have looked at the kind of the methodologies out there. And can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. Actually, it's interesting that you asked that, Jenny. Yesterday, I presented on a panel with Bill Bransford and Mike Causey in front of a room full of about 200 people asking these very same questions. And Mike made a really good observation. He said, you know, if you want me to prove to you that federal employees are overpaid, I can do so. If you want me to prove to you they're underpaid, I can. And I think a lot of these studies have already formed their hypothesis, and then they're manipulating the data to reach their already established conclusion. I think it's important to remember that the Bureau of Labor Statistics is a nonpartisan, nonpolitical entity whose main purpose is to study compensation, and they continue to say that federal employees are underpaid by 20 to 30%. This spans numerous administrations over decades. We continue to hear that federal employees are underpaid.
Well, and I think the Government Accountability Office and the Congressional Research Service just came out with reports saying almost exactly that, that there are all these studies out here, neither is right or wrong. They just, you know, depends on how you use the data and which bucket of data you're looking at to get those surveys. And I'd like to take a quick break here for our first break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about something Mo touched on, the retirement calculations, changes for new employees, and sort of the conversation that's out there for current federal employees. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we'll be back in just a minute after we hear a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with Bruce Moyer, Mo Gilman, and Jesse Clement talking about some of the issues that are affecting federal employees on Capitol Hill. And if you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left, we were talking about the different studies on pay and benefits. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, salaries used to be kind of the talk of, is, you know, does X federal employee over here make more money than a private sector counterpart? But now some of the conversations I'm seeing are benefits. It's not so much salary that's different. Everybody's focusing on, hey, federal employees get a better retirement package or healthcare package or, you know, whatever the talking point is. And we've seen some legislation to that effect and thought we should talk a little bit about what we've seen and where we're going. You mentioned, Mo, you mentioned the changes to retirement calculations for new employees. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, as part of legislation that was passed last year, if you are hired as a new federal employee starting in January, you will have to pay in 2.3% more of your salary toward the defined benefit portion of your pension. I actually have talked to a number of federal employees who didn't realize that this was going to be more money paid toward the defined benefit portion, but thought that they were going to just be required to pay more into their TSP and would get a bigger payout. That's not the case. This is just you're going to pay more and get the same thing that the guy who was hired the day before you gets for 2.3% less. So it's really going to create a two-tiered system. Some people would say it's a three-tiered system, since we already have CSRS and FERS that are different. But this is going to mean that starting in January, those new hires are going to pay significantly more for the same.
And it's different because right now, FERS employees are paying 0.8%, I believe, to their pension. And what most employees, for those of you who aren't familiar with it listening today, you've got kind of a three-legged stool, if you want to say that, for current employees. You've got, under the FERS system, you've got your TSP, Social Security, and the pension, which I think Jesse, do you know how much, or Mo, how much an average, or Bruce, the average pension part is right now?
I do, Jenny. For CSRS, the average monthly pension is under $3,000. It's right around $2,800. For FERS, it's under $1,000 a month. I mean, these are not overly generous plans, no matter what USA Today might like to tell its readers.
Right. And since you mentioned USA Today, I'll leave it up to any of you who want to explain real quick what the latest USA Today article was about the pensions. Jesse, since you brought it
up. Sure. We actually spoke to the reporter before the article was published. USA Today recently pulled data on the number of federal employees who are collecting six-figure pension salaries. The pension system is calculated based on your highest 3 years of service. Most of those higher six-figure pensions are CSRS employees who probably did very specialized, very technical work. We are talking about inherently governmental jobs, protecting our national security, keeping our air safe, air traffic controllers. This is the system that was in place. And in 1986, the system changed to draw attention to a system that, you know, has already been changed to prevent such things in the future is really unfair, and it really detracts from the general conversation. We've been hearing a lot on the campaign trail that federal employees shouldn't be getting a better deal than the taxpayers they work for through taxes. And that detracts from the actual debate because how do you compare 2 million federal employees to, you know, millions and millions of working Americans and the pensions that they receive?
Well, and that's been one of the conversations, I think, that's gone on is what types of jobs do federal employees do versus the private sector? And Mo, Bruce, I know you've both talked about that a lot.
Well, I think one thing, this goes back to the different studies and the results that they come up with. It depends on who they're comparing federal workers to. And some of those studies have compared the federal workforce to just the entire private sector workforce. And I think that, that leads to a conclusion that federal workers are paid more. But the federal workforce is and has become even more so in the last two decades, a very highly skilled, highly educated professional workforce. It has it doesn't have any people working retail. It doesn't have any people, for the most part, doing service type work. A lot of that work that used to be done by the federal workforce, if it exists at all for the federal government anymore, it's done by contractors. So the workforce itself has changed so much. I know my union represents attorneys, accountants, physicians, that is where the growth has been also in the last few years. So the workforce has changed, and I think people's idea of the federal workforce hasn't caught up with reality. We actually just did a survey. NTEU,
right, the study's been out all over, gotten some good press. So.
Yeah, we used Ipsos Public Affairs, which is one of the largest polling firms in the United States, and asked them to do a study on people's attitudes toward federal services that are being provided by federal employees, whether they think resources and manpower going toward those services should be increased, decreased, or stay the same. And the results were overwhelming. We asked, for example, about resources for food safety, and 69% of respondents said more. The federal government should be spending more on food safety. 72% said they should be spending more on border security. 86% said more resources and manpower should be spent on veterans assistance. And these numbers also, we had them plug in demographics. So these numbers are not only Democrats, but independents and Republicans joining in these large majorities to say, we think the federal government should prioritize these things and not be cutting funding for them. And I think it was timely between the debates in Congress and the debates on the campaign trail to get this information out there.
Well, and one of the things that seems different about this is that it asked specifics. I mean, it
exactly.
wasn't that broad question that you usually hear is, what do you think about the government?
Exactly.
I mean, this kind of faceless bureaucrat idea is very different when it's either your own safety, food safety or health or something personal or your neighbor, you know, right. who works for the federal government. It's a little different. And Bruce, Jesse, do you want to comment a little bit on other ways that we've been working on to kind of get that idea out there on who the federal employee is? And, you know, I know each group has been doing individual things. And
well, I'll speak to a new initiative that the Federal Postal Coalition has undertaken in just the last several months, and it will extend through the remainder of this year, especially during the election season. It's a campaign called America Counts on Us, and it's designed to raise the visibility of the importance and the value of the federal workforce during the election season in about 8 or 9 states, pivotal states that will have an important impact upon the course of the outcome. And it's a nonpartisan campaign. It's not designed necessarily to endorse the candidacy of any particular challenger or incumbent, but at the same time to inject into the debate the visibility and the importance of what federal employees do in keeping this country safer and stronger, and the important role that each and every federal employee provides and the services that the government provides, so that when we talk about deficit reduction and when we talk about the prospect of increasing or lowering taxes, that we're aware of how that plays through to the kinds of services that each and every American receives every day and the kinds of things they rely upon.
And that's something I think that's going to be an ongoing conversation. Jesse, I know NARF's taken a leading role on this as well. Have you found that people are willing to engage in this conversation, or is it still that people aren't really even aware of the conversation out there? I think that's kind of what the poll found a little bit, is people don't always connect these things.
I think that's right, Jenny. I think people don't think of federal employees as the ones who ensure that their Social Security check arrives on time every day, that they're the ones assisting our veterans. And what I really enjoy about the America Counts on Us campaign, which I have the privilege of chairing, is that federal employees are banding together to bring attention to the fact that they are constantly under attack by Congress. We've targeted places where there are a lot of federal employees, but they are being left out of the conversation. It's really easy for a member of Congress to vote against federal employee issues and, you know, decrease their pay and benefits if they don't know that there are federal employees living in their district. And I think it was you, Jenny, who met with a member of Congress at one point who had said, I don't have any federal employees in my district. And that is appalling for me to hear, because every district, every state across the country has federal employees and retirees, and they're getting lost in the conversation when it comes to deficit reduction.
Right. And that's, you know, and unfortunately, that's a claim I've heard a lot of times, is, oh, well, I don't know any federal employees, or I don't represent any federal employees. And it's one that, you know, I think most Americans, too, if you said, oh, do you know federal employees, might say no. But if you start asking, well, don't you know the, you know, postal worker who comes and brings the mail to your house? Or what about your Social Security office? Or what about, you know, it kind of reminds me of some of those signs that say, get your hands off my Social Security, or, you know,
keep people, your government hands off right, my Medicare.
Right. And so, you know, so I think there's a lack of understanding sometimes. But the poll shows, which is interesting, is that when people understand who specifically where these cuts are going to be made.
Right. That they strongly support more resources. Mm-hmm. And I think that was surprising to us, you know, how high the majorities were, and the fact that it's really a bipartisan response. A couple of the other questions that we asked that were also interesting, and this goes to the point that you were both just making about what the public is not aware of in terms of the federal workforce. Only 40% of the public had any idea that federal employees have already contributed to deficit reduction through a 2-year pay freeze and increased contributions to their pensions. So, you know, a large majority is unaware that we've already given. And another large majority also had said, 67% said that if you need to raise revenue from wealthy Americans, you should definitely go there first before you cut these services that we believe are so important.
Right. And that seems to be, Bruce, what you were saying about the America Counts on Us campaign is taking the conversation away from D.C. I think it's easy to get stuck in the D.C. mentality where we hear about this stuff all the time. But what are people hearing back home? And that certainly seems to be where the campaign is going. So when we come back, I want to maybe touch on a couple of things. We're going to take another break here, but touch on some of the pending legislation that's out there, because you've talked a little bit about the cuts and the things that are coming down the line. And so I'd like to visit a little of those when we come back. We're going to stop here for a quick break. And you're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with Bruce Moyer, Maureen Gilman, and Jesse Clement, colleagues on the Fed Postal Coalition, and we're talking about the issues affecting federal employees in Congress and some of the conversations that have been taking place that sort of really build the picture or momentum for pro or anti-federal employee legislation. And we've talked about public opinions of government, but we've only briefly touched on how those translate into some of the legislation that we're seeing on Capitol Hill. And unfortunately, a lot of it seems aimed at cutting benefits or changing the way the system works in other ways. But wanted to touch on one big one that we haven't talked about really. And Bruce, could you give us a little bit of an update on Postal Service reform? Because I think that is going to have an impact both on the Postal Service, very, very big impact, but also some of the issues that surround that could affect some of the other.
Sure, it certainly could. The Postal Service, as most everyone knows, has severe financial challenges. Those have been brought about by several factors. Everyone thinks of the internet and the impact of electronic diversion, as it's called, of mail onto the internet and through email and other types of electronic services, bringing about a decline in mail volume and therefore really hurting the finances of the Postal Service. But the greater factor has been these huge payments that the Postal Service, since 2006, has been required to pay into a trust fund that helps to keep the assets of the government higher than they otherwise would be. The Postal Service has to pay close to $6 billion a year. So that's B with the billion, not million, $6 billion a year for its future obligations for health benefits for retirees of the Postal Service. Now, let's keep in mind that the Postal Service has the second largest workforce in the country, second only to Walmart, and a huge number of retirees. At the same time, the Postal Service receives nothing in taxpayer monies. There is not a penny that any of us pay through our taxes that go to support the Postal Service. Its finances are governed entirely by postage that it receives from its products. The Postal Service, due to those pre-funding payments for retiree health benefits and to some extent electronic diversion, is losing about $25 million a day and has racked up a debt of $12 billion. It has a debt limit of $15 billion, and it's certainly approaching that mark rapidly. It's been unable to pay for the last 2 years now its payments into that retiree health benefit fund, bringing about the need for Congress to make some changes, first of all, to that formula for its pre-funding payments for retiree health benefits, but also to give it greater flexibility in the kinds of products that it provides, particularly non-postal products, in line with what posts around the world are doing in terms of their product packages. Congress, though, has been very slow to react to the problem. There are two bills that that are in play on Capitol Hill, one on the Senate side and one on the House side. The Senate bill has been passed by the Senate back in April. It's a relatively good piece of legislation. It came over to the House and has just sat there since late April. The House bill has not moved onto the House floor, only because there aren't enough votes to get it passed. It's a much more drastic bill that would close thousands of post offices around the country, and no lawmaker during election year is going to vote for a bill that is going to cause his or her post office to be closed.
So I guess that means we won't be seeing postal reform on the floor in the next 2 weeks in September when they're in session.
It's very unlikely that we will see movement on that legislation before the election, during the lame duck session that we haven't yet talked about. There are going to be other issues that are in play. So I think we're going to have to look to next spring to see any action on postal reform to try to put the Postal Service back on a better financial footing. And a lot of the dynamic of what comes out of the election and who's in control at that time will help to I think, affect the outcome of that legislation. The other thing to keep in mind is that it's now projected that by next spring, the Postal Service truly will run out of money, unable to pay the salaries of its employees. Congress most often reacts only when there is a crisis, and there truly will be a crisis at some point in 2013 affecting the Postal Service and the mail that we depend upon arriving in our mailboxes every day.
So we're really facing a tight deadline here then on this, where there really is some of this legislation, you know, we're almost saying, let's kick the can down the road and hope they don't take it up. Whereas with Postal Service, there's a wall there.
There is a wall. There
and,
is a wall.
And they need to be moving on it.
Exactly.
But a lot of factors at play. And I think, as you said, the lame duck session is going to be, they've got quite a few other things they're dealing with on their plates. But one of the things we haven't mentioned is that right now, for those of you who don't follow Congress in the same fashion that we do, they return September 10th from kind of a five, six-week vacation. And they're only going to be on Capitol Hill in session for about 2 weeks, a little less than that, and then pretty much gone until after the election. So anything that federal employees are going to see or not see is going to happen in those 2 weeks in September. So aside from Postal Service reform, Jesse and Mo, do you want to talk about any other legislation that you're watching or looking out for?
Well, I think the biggest thing will be the funding of the government for some period of time. The fiscal year ends and the new fiscal year begins on October 1st. And so that is, the one thing that Congress really has to address when they come back. And before they went on recess, there were some statements made by the leaders of the House and the Senate and the administration saying, we've got a deal. We've got an agreement for a continuing resolution that's going to be it's going to last for 6 months, and it's going to be based on the 2013 numbers from the debt ceiling deal. And so no one needs to worry about a potential government shutdown, which is what happens when they don't have this in place and we reach October 1st. But as you say, I believe there are 8 legislative days scheduled between when they come back and when they are scheduled to go out again. And from everyone I've talked to on Capitol Hill, this CR has not been written. It's not ready. And that the details, you know, from people that I've talked to have not been worked out yet. So, I hope that the statements that were put out before they went on recess hold, but you know, it's
we
not over till it's
all
over.
Those government shutdown clocks coming back,
possible.
Which
it's just possible.
Went through what a couple different times last year on those, and it seems to kind of be no appropriations get through. We look at a government shutdown, run up last minute, they push a CR through, and the government has actually functioned this entire year, I guess, in 2011 was on a CR, I think. I don't believe we've had any appropriations go through.
There are, I think, 12 appropriations bills that the Congress passes each year or has a responsibility to pass. Very often those bills get wrapped up into one catch-all piece of legislation called an omnibus package. And not a single one of those 12 bills have been passed by both houses of Congress for fiscal year 2013. It's one more indicator, I think, of how poorly Congress has done its job. This is a dysfunctional Congress. Mo and Jess and I have worked the Hill for a number of years personally. I've never been as frustrated in the 30 years that I've been in Washington with the lack of progress and the polarization that exists in the Congress.
And it really does make it difficult right now to get anything through, although we are watching a couple things have passed the House, one of which was the changing the retirements for the new federal employees. But, you know, is there talk of maybe them moving a bill that would change retirement for current federal employees? Because that was a talk out there. And then you've got also the legislation that passed the House that would allow agencies to fire tax-delinquent federal employees, which I know a lot of folks think is more of a statement piece than necessary. Jesse, do you want to talk about the tax-delinquent one?
Sure. In my previous job at the Federal Managers Association, we worked on this bill a lot. It is a very, very poorly written bill that would terminate the employment of any federal employee who's delinquent in their taxes and not allow for the hiring of any potential employee who is also delinquent. To quote Representative Connolly during a hearing on the bill, this is a solution in search of a problem, the solution being the firing of federal employees. When you look at the number of federal employees that are actually delinquent on their taxes, when you remove military retirees and the federal retirees as well, it is 0.5% of the federal workforce that is delinquent. By contrast, the American public as a whole is about 17% delinquent in their taxes. This bill passed the House. It's nothing more than a statement piece, as you mentioned. We are hearing because of that, and because it makes good sound bites, it's easy to sell at home, that this may be considered by the Senate. And if it does, and this ultimately becomes law, my personal opinion on it is that it is such a bad piece of legislation that you will probably never see any federal employee actually terminated. It is much too easy to make a mistake when doing your taxes. I believe the Secretary of the Treasury actually did so. What are we going to do, terminate the employment of the Secretary of the Treasury? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And then one of the other things we just talked about was also changes to current retirement benefits as well. Is that something we're going to see going forward?
Well, the House has already passed legislation that would increase contributions for current federal employees. The Ryan budget, named after Paul Ryan, who is now the Republican vice presidential nominee and is the chairman of the House Budget Committee, had a budget resolution that would freeze pay through 2015, reduce the workforce by 10% over 3 years, and come up with $112 billion in unspecified cuts to the federal retirement program. A second bill to implement some of those pieces of the his budget resolution, called a reconciliation bill, actually also passed the House and put into effect a 5% increase in contributions for all federal employees, current federal employees, toward their pensions. So that's the equivalent of a 5% pay cut on top of the two-year freeze that they've already had.
Right, because it's not going into anything that they'll see a return from.
Exactly.
It's just going into the pension portion.
Exactly. And it's actually paying more for less, because another part of the legislation will eliminate the FERS supplement, which is something that if you are eligible to retire earlier than 62, you could currently get. This would eliminate that benefit. So you'd be paying 5% of your salary more for a less generous pension package.
Which would that affect then? One of the things I've been watching is all these agencies are offering early retirements to try to cut their budgets. And so that would hit those employees, I believe, who are taking those early retirements.
Right. If they get rid of the supplement and you're eligible to go out early before 62, you would no longer be able to take this supplement. And a lot of people, you know, have planned for this, have been working for the federal government for 30 years. And, you know, we have members that, you know, with ill spouses who, you know, have planned their whole career to go out when they're 58 or something like that. And if this gets pulled out from underneath them, it'll really be a hardship.
Right. It changes the game a little bit for
yes.
people. So, and on that not so good note, we're going to stop here and take a break and hear a word from our sponsor. But when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the legislation we've seen and then some of the big things that are coming up that might change things in the lame duck session. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, please give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or send us an email at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left for the last break here, we were talking about the changes to retirement. Are there other things that have come out? One of the things that everybody's heard about is the GSA scandal, and that seems like there are changes and cuts pending to travel and conferences. Has that also pushed some of the rhetoric on federal employees? And do we think we're going to see more, you know, now there's this VA thing that's brewing with the IG investigation about their conference. Is this going to be used to fuel more legislation, do you think, about federal employees and cuts? Or is the short time frame, the election, sequestration, is that going to take over and maybe some of this individual legislation will slow down?
Jenny, I think the members of Congress on Capitol Hill that already feel that the federal government is inefficient, that federal workers are overpaid, all the negative things you hear about federal employees, the ones that already hold that belief are really jumping on this bandwagon, you know, because of the spending on conferences from GSA and now the VA scandal. So I think situations like these just give those members of Congress the excuse to do the things that they've already been wanting to do.
I would agree. The GSA conference scandal has really given government a black eye. It's an anomaly, but nonetheless, it's out there. There certainly are going to be further horror stories that are going to be revealed with regard to incidents of conferences, and we all know that the first things that get cut whenever there are budget cutbacks are training and travel. Training is certainly, as Mo I think so articulately indicated earlier, the federal workforce is a higher educated, more professional component overall of the demographics of our population. Training, therefore, is an important part of making sure that it's the best and the brightest that we have. And yet at the same time, we're going to be seeing cuts in training and travel that are all a part of what makes a conference happen. But those are part of a larger dynamic, a larger landscape that looks to what will happen during the lame duck in terms of this thing called sequestration, the automatic budget cuts that are a sword hanging over the head of Congress to cause it to come to agreement on a deficit reduction package. And yet, whether they can do that it really remains unknown during the slam duck session, and the possibility of close to 10% of a cut in every budget of every agency and department and the federal courts could come about effective January 1st.
And I'm hearing, though, talks of the Simpson-Bowles 2.0. For those of you listening who don't know, Simpson-Bowles was the commission that, I guess, preceded the bill that went through that is leading us down this road to sequestration. And it was this plan, a comprehensive plan, I guess, if you want to call it, with ideas. And part of it did affect federal employees. It talked about changes to retirement, changes to staffing levels. And it's kind of been the underpinning in some extent to some of this legislation that we've seen on attrition or some of the retirement changes. But now I'm hearing talk of a new revised plan. Have you, Mo, have you heard anything about that?
Just what I've read in the press, that there are groups of members of Congress meeting, trying to see whether they can come up with something that can be agreed to, it's going to have bipartisan agreement to get passed. But they need to do something to address the sequestration, as Bruce mentioned, that is going to take effect at the beginning of January unless they do something else. There was just a report that came out from CBO in the last couple of days about the economic impact of sequestration if this goes forward. And clearly we are just clawing our way back from one of the deepest recessions that our country has ever had. Excuse me, and we are not there yet. And I think if this sequestration goes into effect, it's going to turn the country right back into another deep recession. So, I hope that one of the things that they are considering doing is, as the Simpson-Bowles Commission recommended, in addition to they proposed a lot of cuts to the federal workforce, to pensions, to the size of the workforce. They also proposed increased revenue. But one of the main things that they proposed was, don't do any of this economy shrinking stuff until the economy is going again. And at the time that their report initially came out, they expected the economy to be growing much faster at this point. And we're not there yet. So I hope that that's one of the things that people are considering, is not to allow any of these really drastic austerity measures to go into effect now, because the broader impact on the economy is going to be devastating.
And I think it's important to point out what the Bowles-Simpson document proposed. A three-year pay freeze on all federal employees, a 10% cut in the federal workforce, increasing the high three retirement formula to a high five approach, a significant increase in contributions for retirement benefits, lowering those retirement benefits themselves, and increasing the premiums that federal and postal retirees pay for their health benefits. a number of hits that the federal workforce would take. And keeping in mind that as we reflected earlier, the only sizable contributions over the last couple of years that have been made towards deficit reduction have already been made by federal and postal employees and retirees.
Although it seems with the Simpson-Bowles and some of what I think is going to be needed for sequestration is, at least in that sense, it was much broader than just federal employees. What we've seen come out since has been an ad hoc, let's introduce a bill here, a bill there, mostly dealing with federal employees, not this broad look at some. They brought in, you know, tax reform and Medicare and Medicaid. You know, they brought in a very big, some big issues that haven't been taken up. And so it'll be interesting to see if that gets discussed in the next few months, because we really won't see any talk of this, I don't think, until after Congress knows who's returning, who's leaving, who won the presidential election. And federal employees, it seems, at least in terms of the election, are still out there because you've got the vice presidential pick who has a budget plan. And I think they have made some comments about federal employees over the course of the campaign. Has that been an issue so far that you're seeing?
Well, we did see Governor Romney makes some comments on the pay issue for federal employees, claiming that federal employees receive 30 to 40% more than the private sector, that they're paid significantly higher, and that he would bring them down to the same level, which, if you put those statements together, would, I guess, mean that he would try to bring compensation for federal employees down 30 to 40%, which is pretty drastic. And, of course, his running mate, Paul Ryan, as we said earlier, is the author of the Ryan budget, which, you know, has already passed the House with requirements for federal employees to continue a pay freeze and to pay significantly more for their pensions. In addition, this week, President Obama sent his alternative pay plan to Congress, and he has been proposing for the past year a very, very small, half of 1%. Increase for federal employees to begin in January. But we were surprised to see when he actually sent the plan forward that he was also requesting that Congress delay the implementation for the length of the CR, which at this point we are expecting the CR to go through March. So we were very disappointed to see that as well. You know, our employees have been under pay freeze for 2 years, and extending it another 3 to 4 months something that we think, like some of these other things that we've talked about, is going to have a minimal impact on the budget. But it's something that our members see as that they've given, as we've talked about, and would like to see others contribute before they get hit again. So that was a big disappointment to see that.
And it certainly sounds like all of these are setting the stage for a continuation of what we've seen discussion-wise on federal employees and some of the legislation we've seen. It'll be interesting to see if we can do this moving forward. We're getting to the end of our show right now, and there's a lot to talk about, but I think much more as we see what's, you know, come November, December, as we get a better sense of what's going on. So wanted to give you guys just a few seconds for any last words about what you think will happen in September, if anything, for federal employees. And if you also want to give your websites very quickly so people can find out more information, Maureen.
Well, I'm hoping that they do get this CR done and that our employees aren't facing another threat of a government shutdown to the last minute or even actually having one. So that's my big hope for the next few weeks. And if people want to find out more about NTEU, our website is www.nteu.org. Great. And love to have people visit.
Thank you. Bruce, quick website real quick.
Two quick websites, naps.org, NAPS.org, and NASA.org.
Great. And Jesse, thanks for joining us. Where can people find out more about NARF?
It's NARF.org, NARFE.org. Thank you for having me, Jenny.
Sure thing. And that's all the time we have for the show today. Thank you for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a good weekend.